You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the mother of all shows. You're tuned into The Brian Callen Hunter Mott's Show, and we are here with Katie O'Brien, author of The Straight A Conspiracy, co-author of The Straight A Conspiracy, but a lot of you guys don't realize that she's also a director, a writer, editor, actor, as well as Claire. And I think it's, you have a middle name.
I do have a middle name.
Yeah. But really, the most important name in the thing is Mott.
That's wrong.
Well, no, it's not.
No, it is wrong. And my mom would come down here and beat you up.
She would?
Yes.
So what is the full name?
Claire Garrity.
Garrity, Irish girl.
- Mott.
Ah, Mott. Well, so if you wonder why she drives around in a Rolls Royce, it's because her family owns Mott Apple.
It's
sauce.
Not true. No, those are distant cousins.
I like to create. Yeah. I like to create drama. Those
are
on my
legends.
The Michigan Mots.
We were talking about how these young ladies, hot young ladies, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. Who says that pretty can't be funny?
Michael Eisner.
Michael Eisner.
Son of a bitch.
Former head of Disney and ABC.
Straight up.
The bottom line is we were talking about how difficult it used to be to get anything from your brain, onto the screen. You know, you come up with an idea. I've got a great idea. I wrote something, and good luck getting that produced because you need, I don't know, $500,000, $1 million, at least $50,000, and try shooting a pilot for under $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. And what's hilarious is that now you can do it for $10,000. Or less. And you guys seem to have come up with an idea. You thought, this is going to be funny. You shot it basically, you know, raising funds among friends and people who you didn't know,
mm-hmm,
even.
Mm-hmm.
And then
then
not only do you shoot
Mott's.
It, yeah, from the Mott's yeah. applesauce empire.
Didn't get any applesauce money from that.
You had to make a whole
absolutely
phone call.
None. Yeah.
And then you guys make this thing, and not only do you make it, you sell it to IFC. You get it optioned by a production company,
mm-hmm.
And a pretty reputable one. And then, you know, that's kind of what's fascinating about this. Do I need to wear my earphones? Oh, just so I can hear myself? All right.
Now you look like a fighter pilot.
I just don't like messing up my perfect hair, which I'm losing, ladies and gentlemen. So what's interesting about this conversation to me is that technology has made it possible for people like you guys to realize what's in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to be not the case unless you had a shite load of money.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your process, ladies.
Well, we started out, we came up with these characters kind of inspired by, we both grew up in New England, and we had these two characters that were total masshole townies that we had a lot of fun playing with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we showed them to people and, you know, workshopped them, put out some YouTube videos, whatever. And, you know, people thought they were funny, but
by the way, masshole is if you're from Massachusetts, they use that for each other. He's a real
mass. Yeah, because Massachusettsian is not, I don't think that's a thing.
Right. I just wanted to
otherwise,
I wanted to know our listeners, some of whom are not from Massachusetts.
That's so. Very lovingly.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No.
That's a little in terminology.
It's a point of pride.
Exactly.
At a certain point, we had a bunch of, you know, small YouTube videos, a few dozen, maybe 100 people who were thinking it was really funny, and a pilot script, and literally no connections. Like, we're not Brian Callen, so we don't know everyone who's important and famous.
Yeah.
And
but it's funny how when you create something, you all of a sudden you have a lot of connections. This town is full of people who want you to solve that problem for them.
Yes.
This town is full of people who are banking on finding at least one person that can come up with an original idea and make their job relevant, because all of them have pools and mortgages and private schools, etc., to finance. And when you come along with an idea that they think an audience is going to want to watch, oh my God.
Which they can see. I mean, that was the key, that they actually could see. Like, when we pitched it, it was a sizzle reel and they could watch it and they're like, oh yeah, we get this.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is that up until recently, the most valuable thing in Hollywood is an idea. Like, the thing that earns everybody the most money is a good idea. And until really recently, that was also the hardest thing to get out there.
Well, because they always say that there are a lot of ideas in Hollywood, but executing that idea is actually what really matters. So right. there are a lot
Which
of great ideas that float around. But now, you know, it's technology exists and cheap technology to actually realize it. And the question, extrapolate for me, what do you guys think in 10 years, what's going to be different? I mean, how much easier do you think it's going to be? Or is it? Because a lot of... When we shot this sizzle, we shot something called Brian Callen Runs for President. Ooh. And it's really, and the one thing that everybody I know, and you directed it, Katie, but the one thing, and Claire, you produced it,
I was the assistant director.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing that, and Hunter, of course, was very involved in producing.
Doing stuff, something.
I did not, I did fucking nothing but show up late and somehow
twice.
Did my thing.
Yeah. He just responded when I yelled at him.
That's it. But what was interesting was that everybody I know said, how much did this cost? This looks like it costs a fortune. And how'd you do such a good job? And I said, I have my ways. I took all the credit. But I will say that the one thing about doing something that with that kind of quality, you still the film is still a very manual process. You still need a really good editor. You still need a guy who knows lighting. You still need a guy who knows camera. You need a guy who knows sound, and those things
guy or girl.
Are physically well, please. But you're right, and those things are require a great deal of collaboration. Organization, and there is a process, a manual process, that I don't think will ever really go away.
But,
I mean,
Brian, here's the question. When there are five tools on which to learn how to do something, how many people are going to have that skill? And when the tools are so cheap that literally any kid, I mean, you know, Coppola has a great quote about he's really looking forward to the day when a 13-year-old girl wins an Oscar on a movie she edited in her room.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Right, but it still takes a certain amount of experience. And, there are tons of people who know how to use Premiere.
Totally.
But they can't do, make magic with it.
Well, that's because story is a craft.
Yes.
Story is very, very difficult.
And producing is a skill that, kind of gets overlooked a lot. But that's so much of how this whole process succeeded for us was because we were super passionate about this idea. We knew we wanted to execute it. We knew we were going to figure out how to put every dollar we raised on the screen. And then we got really crazy about how we could convince talented people to work on this with us. So that it did. It looked like, we shot it for $250,000.
Because we had done other YouTube videos and went through, several editors and several different people who did lighting, who did sound, we cherry-picked the ones that we wanted for, the big project, the $10,000 project.
Yeah.
The 10 episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think that this technology, it's always going to be very, very difficult to pull off a good good movie, a good TV show, a good story. I don't think it's ever going to go away. I think that's going to be literally one of the hardest things in the world to me. I believe, and I don't care what anybody says, is coming up with a good movie. It requires so many different moving parts. But I do think that technology is going to make it possible for people everywhere, all over the world, like poor kids in India, Afghanistan, Pakistan, wherever it might be. There are budding filmmakers and
poor kids in LA, like we started that.
Yeah, brilliant. But people who have an idea and a dream, and you're going to see some brilliance come out of parts of the world that never would have been the case.
That's already true.
We already are. I mean, there are full features at Sundance shot on iPhones. I mean, anything is possible now. But that's the thing, is we got through the sort of workshopping of the characters, and we were totally sure that we had a story that people were excited about. And so then it was so empowering to have that moment where we said, we can't get anyone to take this script. We can't get anyone to read this script. How are we going to get this script to some big network? And then we were like, F this. We're just going to make it ourselves and show people what the show is.
Right.
What kind of stories do you think need to be told? Like, are you lofty in your goals that way, or is it just about being funny?
Wait till everyone sees the hub. I'll answer.
This is not high art, ladies and gentlemen.
No,
there is a choice you make, because it's for me, I'm a jackass, and every time I try to get off into something deep, I'm always like, oh boy. But I always find that for me, maybe I was just put on the earth to be a silly goose with maybe a little depth.
Yeah, you know what I mean? but through silliness, you get to more people. Mm-hmm. And right. actually, like, if you are conscious with what you are saying and telling and the characters that you are creating, even if you are making a comedy, it could be a statement, you know, and it should be a statement of some kind.
What are the movies that you guys found to be the most inspiring? Like, do you remember a moment when you were young women or girls where you were like, holy shit, I want to do that. I want to be involved in that. For me, it was Raging Bull.
Apocalypse Now.
Really?
I love
it. I'm really
Is that right?
For,
yes.
But that's very interesting.
Hold please for Katie's answer, because...
So Apocalypse Now surprises me.
Yes.
It's an incredible movie, but it's also... an incredible movie.
Yes.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
It is.
This is the
it's so good.
And those bombs and the napalm.
So many different ways. Yeah. And it's just, you know, the colors,
a gasoline smell all over the hill. It smells like victory.
So good. And just that scene where Martin Sheen's head comes up above the water and it's just his green head. I mean, every single shot in that movie is so perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah,
love that movie.
Based on Conrad's Hearts of Darkness. Mm-hmm. Did you see the documentary on the making of?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Coppola was going crazy.
Which is why, you know, I feel like it speaks to... I mean, it spoke to me because the passion of him making that movie is on the screen. Mm-hmm. Like, it just is there. It's palpable.
Yeah, I felt like it was a controlled fall. I felt like he was literally doing everything kind of... on the fly. It was one giant improv. Like,
yes,
he just, he didn't
and
let
Brando
himself...
didn't even, you know, say the words he was supposed to.
I know.
He just made everything up.
I know.
He didn't show up forever. Yeah. And then he finally showed up and was fucking brilliant.
Yeah. Like Brian Callen.
Similar.
Yeah. yes.
Similar.
Katie,
Like an early Brian Callen.
Brian Callen's a lot more shredded. I've been taking creatine. What is your.
Easy. No problem. Okay, so yours is Raging Bull. And Claire's is Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Three Amigos.
That's
hands
actually...
Maybe Spaceballs, but Three Amigos probably. Like, I was obsessed
as a little kid
with Three Amigos, with every Mel Brooks film, with anybody who could write a movie where every line was a joke.
Yeah.
Like, and there's no... And yet you still care so much for these underdogs in both of the... And I just have seen both of those movies, like... 10,000 times.
Well, that's actually obsessed. Another surprise to me. Mainly
I could watch
because,
every drama once, and I could watch those like over and over till I die. Yeah,
I forgot how good that movie was.
So good.
Brian, do you want to change your answer?
Well, I will.
Raging Bull is an incredible movie.
Well,
it is.
Yeah, but I also remember being absolutely...
shocked at how similar it was to your own life.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I certainly modeled my way. That movie actually... captured how I felt as a guy generally, like how, you know, the boxing, the idea of this guy who just felt like the only way he could kind of negotiate with the world is punch through a wall, or jealousy, masculine jealousy, powerlessness in the face of like mafia guys, and you don't know how to fuck the deal, so now you gotta take it out, whatever it was, the angst. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, I'd never seen effort like that. You know, I when you see somebody like Robert De Niro, who becomes actually a fairly good boxer for the role. Oh, and by the way, he gained 66 pounds. I had never seen that artistic, an effort that artistic, that visceral.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I said, I didn't even know what to do with myself when I saw that.
Oh,
I didn't even know.
There's passion in that movie, too.
I've never seen anything like that. All of them, the effort was on another level. And I think I've always been haunted by the fact that, like, and I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I've always been somewhat ashamed of the fact that I'm not a starving genius with ribs, and I want a woman coming in with a plate of food. You haven't eaten in 24 hours. Get out of my office, you harpy! You know, I want to be that guy.
Pulls out a chunk of hair, throws it. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I've always felt like I never touched, like, you know, if you read The Agony and the Ecstasy with Michelangelo, who doesn't have time to eat, and he's going blind.
Right.
We all kind of
struggle. The actual literal starving artist.
There are a lot of ways to experience that feeling, for one. Also, I think the important thing is that there's a place for everything, and it's all important. Like, Claire and I have been talking about this a lot lately because we're now pitching new comedies and selling new shows and things. And
we talk
a lot of the content that's out there right now, you know, this currently in our culture is very focused on like dystopian, like in a sad, sad gray world where one teenage girl who maybe is not from these parents could save them all. It's like, I miss Three Amigos. Like sometimes I just need that because I already kind of feel shitty about most stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
And now all these movies are like, guess what? It's only going to get shittier. Like, that's, you know.
I agree. Southpaw felt that way, that movie. I was like, I can't watch Southpaw. I interviewed 50 Cent for the movie, and I was like...
Was that before or after he went bankrupt, and how were you involved
in that?
It was actually right before.
No, it was actually right after. But I didn't have bankruptcy. It was more to protect himself from some litigation, but...
What?
Yeah. Yeah, but it was interesting because I was like, I don't think I want to go see something that heavy. I'm too old for that now. I don't care.
I think I've been too old for that since I was like 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll watch every drama once, maybe twice. But yeah, at the end of the day, I kind of just want.
And I watch dramas over and over again. This is why it works out.
Yeah, we're a good writing team.
But I remember being so flabbergasted with how good Stripes and Ghostbusters was.
Ghostbusters.
I was flabbergasted.
So good.
I've never been that entertained. I was so entertained in Ghostbusters as a kid that I was in high school that I remember biting my nails. I didn't laugh. I was so over fucking whelmed with how good it was. Over fucking whelmed with Bill Murray being that funny, and I remember biting my nails not knowing what to do with myself. That's when you know you're really moved, where it's beyond laughter. I've never seen anything like it.
Right. Well, that's when comedies were good.
Yeah.
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 No,
yeah, goddamn
there's some
right.
solid 80s comedies mm-hmm. that you just revisit and you're like, oh, they understand comedy, timing, crafting your joke and not just sort of improvising until you hit a joke, perhaps.
Yeah.
That style is
odd. What do you think of that?
Me.
So talk to me about that. Like, because I always find myself underwhelmed with, and I don't want to single them out, but Adam Sandler movies and... And those kinds of movies
broad, and that's just like over the top, ridiculous, I feel like. And I feel like the sort of Judd Apatow school, where it is sort of, we're going to improv until we sort of hit something. And then instead of, you know, because we workshopped our characters and our jokes forever so that we figured out, that's the joke and that's how we get there. But we didn't, you know, actually record us getting there. And so, I mean, that's just my, like, preference in comedy. And I'm sure that people laugh at, you know, things like Bridesmaids, and that's great, and that's a great movie.
The fun of today is like anything that can find its audience will rise to the top with its audience. This is the long tail. This is all of that. You know, it makes sense to me that the Judd Apatow like improv-y comedy came out once The Office hit here, once everyone was like, well, we like it to be really natural and just conversational and da-da. But I still would take The Singing Bush over any of those things,
And The
Invisible Swordsman, you know, but that's what's fun and challenging and constantly exciting about creating
comedy
is that like nothing makes everyone laugh. And everything makes somebody laugh.
It's so subjective.
And so it's just finding your audience. And
but
that's,
if you look
Brian
at like
Callen.
Monty Python.
And Brian yes. Callen does
Brian
make everyone
Callen.
Laugh.
Brian Callen. It's a great universal.
I'm the Gallagher of today. But if you look at Monty Python, Monty Python was so rich with history.
Yeah.
Like Monty Python, you kind of had to be educated in a way or at least have an understanding that you are not the fucking center of... Like, I was trying to write this joke about, like, my least favorite Americans are probably Donald Trump and Kanye West. And you know, they're energetic, ambitious guys who've done some stuff. But I think what bothers me the most about them is their lack of perspective in terms of where they stand in the grand pantheon. They think they're the tree. And I think it's important to know that you're just a little leaf on a big tree. I prefer to be around people like that. They tend to be a little more thoughtful. They tend to be a little more humble, a little more giving, and a little more inspirational to me.
But Trump West is an amazing ticket. Like, they can turn America around.
Trump West is probably the greatest ticket ever.
Oh my god!
Yeah, they would just have—they just have a mirror in front of them. And they just stare at them, and they just—they look in the mirror.
The entire White House interior design.
They'd have huge fights.
Yep.
And Kim Kardashian is America's second lady.
Fantastic!
Oh wow!
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Dangerous.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like. With like Monty Python humor and stuff, there was it's more inspired. It's more inspired maybe in terms of, I don't know the answer, and I don't want to dissect humor here.
No, we should dissect humor. Dissecting humor is like an amazing activity because you have to sort of figure out, okay, well, where do we fall, you know, and Monty Python is, you know, it's smart humor. As silly as it is, it's like the Ministry of Silly Walks. But it's also bring out your dead. I'm not quite dead yet. Yeah. You know, that whole bit, which is just making fun of the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, who makes fun of that? But it's hilarious because they do their research. Like, yeah. They're smart comedians.
Well, they also came up in the UK, and you don't have any choice but to at least have some understanding.
Well, they also went to Oxford and Cambridge.
Right.
Yeah, they were highly educated guys.
Yeah.
Right.
I think Judd Apatow's got something to say. I mean, I think he knows how to tell a story. Like, a 40-year-old virgin, I thought, was a really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he knows how to create characters that still have heart. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Yeah. Like, characters that still have heart. And this is sort of, you know, like, what appeals to us is definitely, how can you create characters that are grounded and that you care about and are rooting for, that then, because you believe that, you get to do the silliest shit possible with them.
Yeah, that's so hard to do.
But also,
but if you can hit that story,
yeah.
then you have unlimited forever fun with what you can do.
But it's also, I mean, I think that's the thing. The real test is, what is the emotional reaction of the audience, right? And you sit and you watch Ghostbusters and you like, it's so good, you don't want it to end. Will the next bit be as funny?
Yeah.
And that's not the experience that we generally have with Apatow movies, right? And it's not to say that...
Well, but some people do.
Is that
because
I'm older, though?
I don't think so. I think it's a... I mean, because I think a large part of it is structure. Like, it takes to... I mean, you know, if you're going to set up and pay off jokes, and you're, like, burying them at every point, and everything is a setup to another joke over the course of 2 hours, that has to be machined like a watch, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of dissecting comedy, like, go back and watch something like Goonies.
Yes,
and
you're
like, it's amazing how much they're, like, you know, setting things up in a way that are funny already, but, like, build to payoffs. Yeah. I mean, it's really exquisite. Done.
Mm. That takes a lot of engineering.
Yes, I mean, Brian,
it's like when you see the way really good writers outline, like Todd Phillips outlines the shit. Todd Phillips will spend a minimum of a year rewriting a script. Like, I've seen it. Like, I've talked to him about it. I've talked to the guys who write with him. And Todd will sit in a room for, 8 hours a day and literally just like discuss an outline.
Writing is rewriting.
And sometimes he walks away from it.
Who said that, Claire?
Yeah, I just did.
But before that.
I know. Hemingway. Yeah. I've read a lot of books on writing.
Hemingway, Claire Garrity-Mott, you know, said
that. Yeah, totally.
Hemingway, who's related to the West Coast applesauce giants.
There's nothing applesauce about that shit. Nope.
It's actually, the name got abbreviated at Ellis Island. The name became My Way. That was a terrible joke. See what I mean?
Like, how Hunter didn't workshop that for very long before using
it. And he backed
off immediately. And we can tell the difference.
But I just want to say, there's like a famous, like, you know, multi-level marketing company called My Way that operates in the Midwest, and that's what it was a reference to. And they have money. Like,
there were some steps.
Hunter keeps appealing with his hands. He keeps opening his hands.
I learned that in yoga.
Listen, guys, this is funny.
We have to scoop Clay.
Claire, who's your favorite female comedian of all time, if you have one? Female actress. I was looking at Katie when I said
that. I know, you were. I was like, oh man, you forgot our
name. I can't look at you. Your beauty hurts my eyes.
It's too much.
It's too much for me.
No, I appreciate a lot of what every female comedian is doing right now in the landscape of comedy. Is that the question? Wait, what was the question?
I don't know. Who's your favorite? Like Madeline Kahn. Lily Tomlin.
Madeline Albright.
Lily Tomlin is great.
Madeline Albright, the former Secretary of State. Found out she was Jewish halfway through her life. Or at the end of her life.
That's a comedian. No, Lily Tomlin is great. I mean, even if you just look at what Lucille Ball did, which you know that she workshopped everything that she did, and everything was so meticulous.
Well, and she's the first, like, badass female mogul, too. You know what I mean? Like, she was in charge of her shit, too.
Yeah.
That's what we're after. Yeah. That's
controversial.
Yeah.
How dare she date a Puerto Rican? The outrage. But that was a big deal back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was Ricky Puerto Rican or Cuban? He was just Cuban on the show?
I don't know. I think he was Puerto Rican, but maybe he was Cuban.
Brian's really good at racial profiling.
Yeah.
Google that shit.
That's what I'm doing.
Google that.
Ricardo. Yeah, man. I mean, when you see I Love Lucy or The Honeymooners, I mean, goddamn.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
There's some
classic.
Did you guys see Trainwreck?
I have not seen Trainwreck yet.
What'd you think?
I need to see it, though. I want to.
Trainwreck.
You have a lot of
thoughts. Do you want to hear some of my thoughts on Trainwreck? I'm obsessed with what Amy Schumer is accomplishing in general right now.
Yes.
And I think it speaks a lot also to like how you have to get to a certain level in Hollywood to get to do your art the way you want to do it, right? So she had to have a season of her sketch show before she could get, and then she's like, oh, I'm renewed? All right, let's get ready, bitches. Like, and all of these amazing feminist sketches are coming out, and it's so exciting. I a little bit wanted Trainwreck to be more purely her, and a little bit to me it felt like a kind of generic rom-com in a lot of places. Like there's a scene and I was like, oh, you're just watching that boat float by in Central Park, just punch the boat, do something to the boat. Oh no, you're just wistfully looking at the boat, okay, got it, right. Or like, don't clean out your apartment because you're upset about the guy, don't do it, you know. But at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, this is what you have to do sometimes. You know, Amy Schumer gets to make a purely Amy Schumer movie that maybe becomes an indie at this stage of her career, or she gets to make a 50% purely her movie that is super mainstream, and now everyone knows her, and maybe the next one gets to be even more her voice, you know. So as part of it is also like, I trust that she's smart in how she plays the game, too. Yeah.
It was weird that there was not one train in that movie, though.
Not one. There was.
Do you expect? Like, where is the action?
Not one train.
I thought
no
this was going to be like
train.
Exactly. I thought it was going to be Under Siege.
I thought literal title. This movie sucks. That didn't happen, Hunter. Sorry.
No.
But she's a badass.
I thought about this answer, and now I have the answer. Carol Lombard and Mae West, comedy geniuses.
Gee whiz.
Female. Yeah, that's.
Those are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Claire, rooted in tradition and drama. Mm-hmm. Katie, a girl of the 21st century.
I was going to say, Terry Garr. Where'd you go to school, Claire?
Columbia.
Oh, smart, man. You smart women. That's rare in LA. I'm sorry.
Wow. I mean, Michael Eisner, I didn't realize you could join us
smart,
today.
Smart, funny, and
I guess what I mean is not smart, but
I guess smart
educated.
Women don't move to L.A.
You can make two out of, maybe that's because they're too smart to move to L.A. in the first place.
Yeah, well, we're not.
Let me save myself and go into another field.
But educated, and educated, I guess, maybe in terms of just, not, yeah, I mean, you know a lot.
Well, here's let me try to save this.
you don't see it.
Here's
it's listen, I'm
no,
sorry,
no,
but it's,
I agree
it's
with
very
you.
Rare.
Like,
it's
is,
rare.
And most people who come out here to write or act have come from conservatory programs and things like that. And when I arrived in LA, I felt like I was at a big detriment, funnily enough, because all of these people had their connections and their networks of other film students and other acting students. And then I realized like the thing I got from going to Harvard instead was the business approach to things, and that, you know, that has sort of changed. I came out here like I'm an actress, and now I feel like I'm a producer and I'm a writer and
everything.
I'm
everything.
Yeah,
I think there's something else though. Like I get something else from both of you. I don't think that's just it. I actually think that when you have a, and I don't come from an Ivy League education, but I will say that, and I include Hunter in this. I think that when you've had the benefit of the education you guys have had, and you both took advantage of it. All three of you took advantage of it. You didn't just go there. You took advantage of it. You studied.
I took so many classes.
You're so damn many. Right. And studied
Italian
well.
Theater twice.
I feel like a lot
it was
of
an
times.
Easy A. I got my GPA up. I was like, oh, I better do this again.
Italian theater.
Yep.
But I do think that at least something even like that gives you the perspective, and I think this is what happens. I think when you've been exposed to a lot of ideas and a lot of different points of view, and been exposed to how to solve a lot of problems, which I think is what that kind of education is supposed to do, you then tend to be less taken away by the things in the moment and trends and things that are trending and things that seem to be happening now. And there tends to be more of a sobering macro sort of outlook on, you know, what really is important and maybe what's going to last. And that can be paralyzing sometimes. Like, too much education can kind of be like, oh, well, you know, why even try when I know everything
about
Faulkner?
Nothing we do is on fleek. Nothing.
Yeah, zero. But I do think that somehow that makes me kind of feel it's a little bit more refreshing, and I don't see it a lot.
Yeah, well, the first few interviews that I had out here, I was literally told to move my education down to the bottom of my resume.
I was told to take it off my resume when I started auditioning. They were like, it makes you seem serious and old.
Yeah,
I was like, but I think I don't feel like I come across that way.
No, fucking
isn't that amazing?
Fuck
in New York, that. Not even in LA. That was in New York.
This is no.
I had
this
the same
is...
experience at Starbucks.
It's true. That's true. Wow.
She's like, I mean, you know, we had the interview, and the woman's like, oh, you're very nice, like da 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 da. But you know, you went to this boarding school in England that I recognize because I think Prince William went there, and then you went to Harvard, and I just don't think you're gonna stay at Starbucks. She's like, you're overqualified. Qualified, and that's why when we started a tutoring company, Katie and I, we called it Overqualified.
Wow.
Right. Well, I got, I didn't get in here, and then I didn't get that job. And then the job I did get, where he did say, move my education down to the bottom of my resume. This was a PA gig on the movie Torque, which is amazing.
Guy's trying to help you.
Yeah. And it was a VFX producer, and he was like, well, I didn't finish high school, so I don't see how college, you know, would have gotten me anywhere. So I just don't think you need to put it on your resume.
Yeah, like, you know what? I got to tell you,
well,
I hear a lot.
Zero value here.
I hear that shit all the time living in LA.
Yeah.
And I hear that shit all the time, period.
But, I mean, you know, thinking in the narrow way for this VFX guy, he has a very specific set of skills that he sells. And he did not learn those by going to a fancy school.
True.
He learned them on the job. It was an apprenticeship.
True.
So,
you know what I like about Hunter? Hunter is one of the more educated people I know. And Hunter is the first guy to come to the defense of people who are not that educated, and he doesn't have a whole lot of reference for quote unquote the educated in a way. I love it.
Well, that's the thing. It's ultimately right in science. Ideas rise and fall on their own merits, and the person who is saying them is utterly irrelevant. And so I just think that's the point. You should test everything based on its own merits, not based on the, you know, does the high priest wear the right robes?
That
and
is true for him. That is not true for all people.
Exactly.
So.
Right. And you know, more power to him for getting, like, hey.
Totally.
This is the town where he will rise to the top, and he did.
Yeah.
And he was awesome, and he hired me. Hey, thanks.
So when you hear scientist, and you're meeting a scientist, what is your, like, so most of us who don't know anything, we hear scientist, we go, he knows everything, he's fucking really smart. So we all of a sudden we go, this guy's fucking really, he's doing, what do you think? How do you profile someone like that typically? Is it, I know you're not intimidated by them. It just means that they happen to have done some thinking on a subject most of us don't do any thinking on, and they have some points of view.
You come into the room as Dorothy, but then you turn into Toto, and you pull back the curtain, and you realize that it's just a man with a machine making loud, booming voices.
Really?
Yeah. But that's what you have to realize, is that that's true for all of that stuff, right? You know, there have always, throughout history, the ability to generate awe in another human being is the basis to getting them to do nothing except what you want them to do. That's, you know, and awe is in some ways a great emotion. Like, it's great that, you know, we can be inspired by looking at the stars or seeing a great piece of art, seeing Raging Bull or whatever. But in everyday life, it gets in the way of us digging in and doing things ourselves. And I think I would ask you guys, like, presumably you had to overcome that to a certain extent and just be like, this show, The Hub, will rise or fall on its own merits, not based on, you know, whether there's a magic man involved
or
whatever, magic woman.
All we had over a gatekeeper like Michael Eisner, like that's sort of the old model that's going away. Obviously, still people have to be the ones who buy things and whatever. But yeah, at that point in the process, I mean, there were a million points in this production process where there was something completely impossible and insurmountable, and we had to get super creative to get around it. Like, we needed to get every location for free. We had essentially no money to do 100 minutes, which is like a feature length because, you know,
we spent so much on swag.
10 episodes, because we gave everybody travel mugs.
Yeah. Swag.
For donating. And then we were like, oh no, we have $5 left. But yeah, but like, we, you know, we were trying to get locations to shoot for free. The Little Bar out here, which is an awesome place. Everyone in LA should go there.
Yes.
Look, is like a Boston bar on the inside. Claire knew the guy that owns it. We could not afford to
get
pay
it for
it.
We had it for 3 days.
Well, yeah. so much of it is just being a mensch, like connections and knowing people and being
well, mm-hmm. and asking right. them and what knowing... else is valuable to you. That's not money. Like, we're going to make this happen no matter what. What is of value to you that isn't dollars? And Claire was right. really smart, and she's like, "What do you need?"
Yeah, and he was like, "I want a part." And I was like, in only in LA.
Yeah.
The owner of the bar that we need. And he's like, I don't want to play the bartender either. I want a real part.
Oh my God.
And someone else is the bartender, and he has a part in he's in three episodes, and he's amazing.
And he's really funny.
In it.
And
so wow. good.
Yeah. And I was like, yes,
yeah.
I can do that for you.
I got us
yeah.
like a free day at a law office. I mean, we shot all over. We also, just the two of us and the director flew to Boston for just 3 days of shooting. We stayed at Claire's house. Her parents cooked us meals.
Mm-hmm.
Keegan, the director, super talented director, Keegan Yule, was doing all of the, like, he was holding the camera, directing the scene, like taping the boom to the ceiling so that we could do it all. And then we just shot every scene that had the two of us and every exterior. And then we came back here to do the full cast. I mean, we just made everything happen in the scrappiest way possible. But when we were done, we had a season that we could show somebody and be like, you don't have to read our script and envision whether we're funny. You don't have to try to picture these girls and their accents. You don't have to do that, because here's the show.
Here's
so if you
show,
want
yeah.
it, you
yeah.
want it. And if you don't, you don't. And then people wanted it.
Like, 10 minute episodes, too, which is the
a
size
lot.
Of a feature.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
yeah.
That we, you know, we
Ten
were
grand.
Just like, oh, yeah. If that.
Not
like
even
seven.
Well, a little.
Yeah.
Wait,
there's
you did,
some,
all, you did we 10 10-minute episodes for $7,000?
Yeah.
What?
Well, yeah.
A little
bit
put
more
in a little bit of our
post-production.
Own
that's crazy.
Production.
Yeah.
I think it
that's
ended
crazy.
Up being about 10 Thanks. Grand.
Yeah.
We
How
were
long
like,
did the whole shoot take you?
It was a 13-day shoot.
Damn.
And then post-production took a
we
while.
We had like 5 different editors for the 10 episodes. We just had to like take whatever favors we could get. Claire
right.
snagged the head editor of The Mentalist at a Super Bowl party. And hey. We were like, oh my gosh, yeah. our other editor, mm-hmm. we were paying him in
Brains
Thai takeout.
Brains and beauty can get
yeah.
you a
yeah.
lot.
Well,
all
we had an editor that we were like paying in Thai takeout, essentially. And then he got a real job on a reality show that paid him with paychecks, whatever.
Yeah.
And so couldn't do the rest of our season. And so, yeah, we were like,
yeah, so then
stuck.
I went to that Super Bowl party. And it just, I mean, you know, it didn't take much. I was just like, ugh, post-production is just so
I can't,
awful.
I don't
can't
even, I don't want to talk, talking about it is making me bored right now. I don't want to talk about post-production. I don't give a shit about editing. Hey, guess who doesn't give a fuck about lighting, camera, post-production, editing, all the most important things about film. I literally, every time I see, I've been doing this for 20 years now. I'm on the Goldbergs now. When they do the thing with the thing and
yeah.
The camera, I'm famous and the kingdom. But I've never done a movie in my life or a TV show where I have said, man, I wonder how they do that. And I wonder who's the grip and the lighting. And I wonder, I aggressively don't care. I aggressively have zero interest in anything, and it's all the most important shit about.
Right.
Like,
well, this
right.
is the most
Katie.
Important
so
thing
important.
Is that the audience doesn't care.
Exactly.
Right? They don't. And if you've done it well, they don't think about those things.
Right.
And if you've done it poorly, they do think
oh
about
my God.
Those
Dude,
things.
That's
you know what
so
I mean?
So important. Sound and lighting and
but
editing
like,
is so important.
Yeah, that's
but
everything that we had to learn
yeah,
in this
you,
process.
You
we
get
only knew how to act
thrown into the fire really quickly because you have to figure out. You know, I mean, and that
telling
was,
a story, acting is so important, but man, that other stuff.
I feel disabled sometimes when I don't know how Premiere works, you know, and I'm just like, I need to.
What's Premiere?
It's an editing software.
Yeah.
I'm already bored.
Yeah,
come back
no.
to the table. You just left the room.
I just die. I
no,
just faint
you,
from boredom. This
you
time.
Either have to do it all yourself if you're, you know, doing it yourself, or you have to figure out those people who actually are really expert at that. And that's why the head editor of The Mentalist, Jimmy Gadd, he's just amazing, was so important in getting because he could do it so fast and he just understood all of those things.
Oh, yeah,
and
he's
all
like a ninja.
He wanted, I mean, and that's the thing, like, all he wanted was a short film script. He's like, oh, I really want to direct something.
Everybody do wants something.
Yes.
Like,
so
Ray Liotta's pissed off he's not Denzel. Denzel's pissed off he's not directing. The one thing I've learned about this business, and maybe it's human nature, is everybody I know, no matter where they are, no matter how successful, is pissed off that they're not doing
somewhere else.
It's
right.
Incredible.
Yep.
My buddy was directing my TV show. It was at the time was kind of a big show, and he had a big movie.
Name the show.
Well, at the time, it was a long time ago, it was called Inside Schwartz, but we were between Friends, and we were between Friends and Will and Grace, and it was supposed to be a big deal. It doesn't matter why it wasn't, but he was directing that, and he also had a Martin Lawrence movie that was like, and he, I was watching him on his phone, and I was like, what's going on? He goes, my movie's not tracking well. Fucking not tracking well. And he was so, like, that's all he was stressed about. I go, you are at the pinnacle. Right now, you're at the pinnacle. When Patty Jenkins got Wonder Woman, I was like, I said to her, you know, at 43 years old, you've reached the apex of your career. This is it. This is it. You're directing Wonder Woman. It's the biggest movie. It's going to be a multi-million dollar. If you want to look at, like, on paper, you are at the apex of your career. This is it. You made it.
Yeah,
right.
But
you're in the game. But again,
what's appealing about deciding that?
Right.
Then you're done. Just give up and curl up and fall and die.
That's what I mean. In fact, it just comes with a shitload of responsibility, headache, and problems you've got to solve. And so, you know, it just kind of makes you wonder at times, like, you know, every time you see, like, Game of Thrones, when I see movies now on TV, like, when I see Game of Thrones, and I see them in that winter, or I see them in the mud, and I see them on horseback, all I think about is, that fucking day must have been hell for the
actors. I had that same thought when there's the new Everest movie is coming out, and every time I see the trailer, I'm like, why did they agree to do this?
There's not a shot I'd do that movie.
No.
I'm telling you I wouldn't do that movie. I don't care if they were like, I'm telling you now, that I don't care if they were like, Brian, this is going to make your career.
You're going to star in the biggest movie
ever. It's going to make my career, is it? Cool. You want me to be where? Freezing my ass off? And I've done it. I hate it. I can't wait for it to be over.
Oh, no,
so
that's
Brian,
just green screened. All that snow is fake.
Yeah, of course it is.
But Brian, if you could, like, just in terms of on-set experience, what movie would you like to be in? Like, is it The Napper or, like...
I hate acting, and I hate show business, and I hate everything I do, and I only like stand-up. But let me get my shit attitude out of the way. But I would love to do, like, something where it's Brian Callen for President, like, where I can kind of, like, where we're doing something funny, and we're doing something... that, like, I'm collaborating with fun people that make me laugh, that are smart. That, it to me, and then we're just coming up with what's called, what I would consider to be original expression. I want to do something original.
Yeah.
I want to surprise myself. That's more important to me. And then
that's what we do.
Let's make it a half hour and make it funny.
Here's the key of what you're saying, is that the majority of your life, if you're an actor or a writer or whatever out here, or whatever everywhere.
Or all of the above.
Everywhere. Yeah. Is that it's really hard to get yourself to a place where you feel like you're in charge of your career, of your life, of whatever. Like, even if you're the best actor, you still have to wait for somebody to say, yep, your audition was the one we like the best, and you look like what we need, you're in the movie, or whatever. And that's, you know,
I mean,
so much of the process of making your own stuff is also about, fine, I'll audition and I'll wait for people to tell me those things too, but in the meantime, I'm going to make something that's mine and put it out, and even if 100 people watch it and love it, that still is better than
so
waiting around.
What
you know?
Katie is
so much
saying
more
is
satisfying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your aggressive disinterest in, you know, lighting and directing and producing
and acting
is why you're at the level of stardom that you're currently at.
Yeah, that's 100%. Well, that's true, because I mean Bradley Cooper, who I've known forever, Bradley Cooper, way before he was famous, was so in love with the process of acting. He loved every detail. Bradley just wanted to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be a fighter / dancer / fucker / all those things. I did.
Yep.
And I was always way more interested in, like Meryl Streep was saying, I've become somebody people admire for playing great women, but I play great women. I'm not a great woman. I think she is, but in her, the way she was saying it, right?
But that's what makes her so awesome. P.S. is that she can say that.
But Meryl Streep, who I think is the greatest actor, period. And then Daniel Day-Lewis, and you got Christian Bale.
Yes,
these people do some shit, right? Where you go, you're so. And by the way, Bradley Cooper in American Sniper, like the detail, the attention to detail, and those days I know where he was lying with a gun and having just to show his expression. You've got to be in love with figuring with capturing that aspect of human behavior in all its minutia. And if you're not into that, which I ain't, I'm into making people. I had to come to terms with this. I'm into making people laugh. I like being a silly goose. I'm fairly light that way. I like to make people laugh. But to capture the, and I thought that I did want to be Robert De Niro and Christopher Walken and those guys. Because they just seem so cool. But I'm actually more impressed with the real boxer. not a knock on the great work that some of these amazing actors do and the effort, because it's incredible effort. I admire that very much.
Yeah, but you have to be in love with the craft.
Yeah,
you have to be willing to go to, you know, such emotional depths that aren't yours. They're not true.
Somebody said, why didn't you make it? Like somebody, Brendan, as you know, but he was joking, but he was being serious. Because we were talking about it. He said, why do you think you haven't made it? Like, you know, because when I was in my 20s, and my 30s, my early 30s, I remember. I mean, people were like, you're going to be this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, it's Mad TV, and now this thing, and Oz, now you're about to. I think it's because I had such a love, mainly hate relationship with actually sitting in a trailer waiting for my shot to come up. I just didn't. I remember doing Oz, which was this dramatic show,
it's
and I was like, "Dude,
yeah,
dude, I don't want to do this, man. This is I'm supposed to love this, but I don't want to." I don't mean to bring this back to myself.
It, though, just I am to give very, you a very little. Good.
I can act. I worked really hard at it. I did a lot of theater. I love doing plays. I'm not saying I don't like that process, but I just think it's interesting that I think if people could see what it takes versus what the result is, they might be less romanced by the process.
Well, that's the magic of expertise, right?
Yeah, that's what Michelangelo said.
It's Michelangelo. Keep going.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. He said, if people knew how hard I had to work for my mastery, they would not think it was so magical.
God damn, I love that quote. And that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fucking true, because it goes back to what you always say, which is, and what you say, Katie, with the book is, like, you know, this idea that we have reverence for genius, reverence for intelligence. It might very well be, you know, complete shit, because it's when you look at how hard they work and how consistent and how many years of proper tutelage they were under.
It kind of takes the
yes,
so much sacrifice.
It takes a lot of the romance out of it. If you look at Djokovic, we were talking about him as a tennis player.
Yeah.
Though that guy has been playing tennis since he was 6 and 7 years old, with really, like, they were showing him perfect technique, so his technique is on a high level. And then you wonder, like, what is it that actually drives you to be a winner on that level? It may not, when you pull the curtain back, it may not be the most honorable. It may not be the most glamorous. It's just that he has to win because fuck everybody. You never know.
Right. Yeah, right.
But
it doesn't matter.
Extreme winners,
you know?
Extreme
Whatever
winners
it
have,
takes to
yeah,
get
they
there.
Have
yeah.
an inner machination that may yeah. not be as maybe
noble.
Showcasey as you'd want it to be. Noble, yeah.
Although the interesting thing is that all of the research shows that people who are intrinsically motivated are more successful over the long run than people who are extrinsically motivated.
Mm.
So if you're doing it for the cash, then obviously you don't have that obsessive level of determination.
Yes.
And certainly once you make the cash, then your motivation goes away to a certain extent.
Yes. But you have to love the thing of it in it of itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
right.
what is
and
that Schiller
process.
Quote that says man is never more in himself than when at play?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
play being that which you do for the sake of doing.
Yeah.
That's so true. And not play in terms of, you know, hookers and an eight ball, but play in terms of whatever language you're trying to master because you learn more about yourself.
And Brian, it's Schiller.
Ah, oh, shit. Touché, you son of a bitch! Yeah.
But it is, and it's the process, too, because, you know, it wasn't that we just got to act. we had to, you know, for this show specifically, we had to figure out who else we were casting and have auditions. You know, we had to, like, wear every single hat that you could possibly wear and not drive yourself crazy. So we had, like, a skeleton crew, you know, so it's figuring all of that stuff out, and then finally we got to act. And then at that point I was like, I don't know.
What? I didn't even think about this yet.
What are my lines?
You guys are good at it, though.
Oh, well, thanks, man.
What do you think is the apex for you? What would you guys like to do ultimately? A feature where we're starring?
I think we want to be in charge. Like, I think we want to have like multiple TV shows that we get to be in charge of, which we're on the way to doing.
I can't wait to be cast. I swear my attitude will be better.
I feel like you ruined your chances today.
I know I'm going to come in and audition for you guys.
You're never going to be in the Three Amigos Apocalypse Now crossover.
Damn it.
Where the singing bush comes out of the water.
That's why we work together really well, because in real life we are kind of foils.
We're like opposites. Yeah.
I go on the waterfront Apocalypse Now, and she's like Three Amigos.
Spaceballs.
For sure.
Blazing Saddles.
Is a great,
such a good movie.
I mean, let's go through. I'll tell you for me, top funny genius movies might be Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein.
Oh, so good.
I gotta throw Stripes in there, and I probably have to throw Ghostbusters just because of what it did to me as a kid. But but you got Blazing Saddles, and then you've got Monty Python and the Holy Grail. But then there's Life of Brian, and I have to put Life of Brian in there before Ghostbusters.
And then you have Tootsie, like Roxanne, like anything Steve Martin did.
I don't put them. They're great, but they're not to me. They're not Monty Python and the Holy Grail. They're not Young Frankenstein.
No, Gene Wilder in Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
That's what I want to do.
That's amazing.
Because he is a character. And then all of the comedy comes from character.
Right. Yes.
And it's so dry, and it's just perfect. So
do you remember Airplane was its own form of humor, too? Like, all of a sudden we were like, what?
Airplane, Naked Gun, like all of those movies. Oh, my gosh.
Incredible movies.
Also, can I just, you know, as a runner-up, Gene Wilder, just only the Gene Wilder sheep part of Everything You Need to Know or Always Wanted to Know About Sex, but We're Afraid to Ask.
Yeah, Woody Allen.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
That is a genius part of that movie.
Trading Places.
Great movie.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Planes, Trains, 48, and Automobiles.
40, oh, my God.
So I knew you were going to flip about that one.
Well, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is in many ways, like, it's such a masterpiece. And when John Candy is sitting at that bus stop and he says, Candace has been dead for 3 years or whatever, he says, I mean, you just go, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
You're such a great actor.
Blows your mind.
This is what we do it for. The seminal moments in my life, I swear to you, were Ferris Bueller lying down on the bed at the end of that movie and saying, stop and smell the roses once in a while or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went, I got to get my life together. The Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, when I saw that fucking guy on that bus bench. And then finally, there was this, fuck, what was the moment that just killed me? Oh, in The Pope of Greenwich Village, when she says to him as he has to get out of town, she goes, how could you let this happen? And he says, I let my whole life happen to me. And he gets on that plane and train and he goes away. And I remember as a kid, I go, that's never going to be me.
Yep.
I'm never going to say that, man. That's why I'm going to be an actor, or I'm going to do what I have to and whatever my heart tells me, because I can't be that guy.
No matter what Big Mike says.
He was a broken, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm serious. He was a broken man. He goes, I love my heart. And he kisses her for the last time.
This is exactly what you were saying and what you were asking about earlier. Do you need to make a statement with what you are saying?
Right.
Even comedies make statements. Even
And you only need one line to do that, and if you've been hilarious the whole movie, then you've earned it, and people care, and people are there with you when that one moment happens.
Right.
I remember Officer and a gentleman, he goes, you can just forget it. He goes, don't you do it. I got no place else to go. I remember just fucking trying not to cry in the movie theater. And then I did.
Did you succeed? Yeah, no, you cried.
I cried hard like a man.
And it reaches more audience, you know, more of an audience than if you did a drama that everybody's like, oh, I don't want to go see that because it's so depressing, or it has a message, or it's about, you know.
Well, there are certain dramas like Deer Hunter, when in that Russian roulette scene, well, I've never been the same after that.
Yeah.
I remember saying to myself, if I'm not, if I'm in that situation and I don't behave that way, I'm not a man. And that's the ultimate test. And I think every man who ever saw that felt the same way. And it's a haunting scene. And you wonder if you're willing to put, I put four bullets. That's a classic example of a movie which I didn't think was so good all the way through. I thought it was too long and just too dark. But there was that scene where I went, where I have never wanted to kill somebody more than I did those guys that kept slapping him. I wanted those guys to die. Like I've never been able to taste it more. And I think most men felt that, where you just had bloodlust because it was the right thing to do, to kill those cruel people.
And we all learned a little Vietnamese.
What is he saying there? Do you know what that means?
I don't know.
But
we can find out on the internet. Speaking of which, Desi Arnaz, who played Ricky Ricardo, was a Cuban-born American.
Yes.
No, I'm
claiming as a victory for Google and for the podcast.
We did some research.
What were your seminal moments? Give me like 5 seminal moments in movies that changed your life.
Oh God, this might take me a minute.
I would say all of the film On the Waterfront,
all of it,
yeah, all of great that movie, because it's so from the sound design to the script to the score to the acting to
there was no one more sexy on the planet ever than Marlon Brando in A Streetcar Named Desire.
That is true.
That's when I understood what it was to be a woman and to be attracted to a man. I never really got it, and then I saw that.
Seeing Michelle Pfeiffer play Catwoman.
Oh boy!
I sat like, next to her. I get it.
To her in a theater when I was in high school, and I've never been more in love with her.
Yeah,
she was the most incredible thing in the world. But 100%, 100%, Catwoman. She was incredible.
Good God.
And when Marlon Brando bites that apple and he's like, ah, to her, and I went, I know what that's like to be attracted to a man. I'm serious.
Yeah, no.
I'm pretty straight, man. I'm pretty damn straight. And I was looking at that going, he's the most beautiful creature I've ever seen. He's the sexiest motherfucker I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
and the whole room felt that way. We were in high school and we were just disturbed by it.
Yeah.
Dudes were. I was like, I want to look like that guy. I want to be like that guy. How is he that sexy? Well, he's like a fucking tiger.
Yes. Yeah,
meanwhile,
yes.
And I looked in the mirror.
You're like, oh.
The consensus is that Diddy Mao means do it quickly. But apparently, based on the tone, it can also mean that's enough.
Damn.
So there are levels within
like an onion.
Yeah. That actor was so fucking just awful good.
But bear in mind, this is from the internet. So it may not actually be accurate.
Anything
but
is all is true on the internet.
But On the Waterfront, you've seen it, yes?
Yeah.
Well, good.
I'm 48.
Oh.
I'm 50.
You, what?
I will be.
Not
look
possible.
At that. I know. Look at that skin. I'm looking at myself. I've been staring at myself.
You have. I do appreciate that your chair is the one that faces the giant picture of you.
I wish my shoulders were a little broader. I wish I was bigger. I'd like to be 210 pounds, but that's not going to happen, and I want more hair, thick black hair. And I want to be 6'2", with a long femur bone, and even longer
Just
arms.
One long femur bone? Like, do you want to be...
So I have to spend a fortune on a tailor.
Yeah, you want to be, like, askew in catty corner, and have, like, one
Freakish.
Really long platform shoe.
But I want to be a genius at the
just
violin.
Just keeps people on edge around you in
exactly.
a good way. Yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Well, Beverly Hills has great plastic surgeons.
Mm. Mm. You can actually get that operation. People do that in China. They get the bones in their legs lengthened to be taller.
I'm sure it's super healthy and
fun because you get to lie in traction for like months, years.
Yeah. I'm sure it's risk-free.
Yeah, there's nothing can go wrong.
Wow.
Especially when you get surgery in China.
China.
Oh, Brian, on the day that Donald Trump made a racist Asian accent, you went to the same place.
I just said China. That's all I did. In Korea, I think they have more plastic surgery too.
It is. I think it's the plastic surgery capital of the world.
Yeah. Human beings.
I don't need that yet.
Guys, it looks like we're almost out of time. The hub.
Yes.
Yes, super
WatchTheHub.com is the
website. All 10 episodes are out now for your viewing pleasure.
I'll tweet about it.
That'd be awesome.
Then you can finally see what we look like.
And yeah.
Is there any nudity?
Judge for yourself.
Is there any smart girls?
You see my ass.
Boobs.
You
and
see my
ass. And yeah, Claire's butt one time.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. And there is this moment where
I'm surprised they haven't taken that off.
And I throw up three times.
That's true. And she eats a lot of fluff.
And I eat an entire container of fluff.
Do you guys watch Girls?
Yeah.
It's not bad, right?
This goes back to the question.
Speaking of
like,
bad acting.
Yes. No, goes back to the question of like taste and different styles of comedy. I watch every episode because I really, really appreciate what
research.
They're doing.
I call it research.
Like, just hate all of their characters because I'm a little too old to
love
them.
What do you hate about their characters? Because Lena Dunham, I had such an attitude toward, and then I saw a couple episodes and I love her guts and I loved what she was doing, but I haven't seen enough of the movie to know.
Right. Well, I think there's a difference between like, does comedy make you laugh or do you appreciate it? Like, as a comedian, you're like, oh, that joke works.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think
I appreciate it, but I don't laugh at Girls because it's either things that I did when I was in my 20s that I don't want to relive at all.
I got you.
Or it doesn't speak to, like, a lot of times it doesn't speak to my truth because, like, you know, I wasn't rich. I didn't have, like, a bunch of parent money to fall back on when I moved to New York. Like, all of the, you know, the sort of, like, I expect everything, but I don't want to do anything about it.
That's interesting.
Right. Like,
maybe that's what I feel, the entitlement.
Yes.
Yeah. But by the same token, it's a freaking brilliant show. I think Lena Dunham has done an amazing job of every molecule of that show is the story she wants to tell and perfectly.
Does she come from a lot of money? Is that her? She's a New Yorker.
Yeah, I think, you know, that was sort of the thing when it came out, like, she does and all of the actresses are legacy-ish, and that's what the story
is,
too.
Right.
It's about this 20-year-old, or, you know.
That come from
she's
parents that
millennially
are, you know, either famous or rich and famous, and then what their struggle is. And I'm like, that's not, I don't have
I don't
as much
empathize
sympathy
with your struggle.
For that struggle, because it's too easy. And so, you know, the crazy antics, it's like,
so you're
kind of
watching angst on screen.
Yes,
you're not.
Yes.
You're not watching real
I feel screen. Like, you know, what we wanted to do with The Hub is go for characters that, you know, start with sort of nothing and are townies and are, you know, just trying to make it to somewhere.
Just trying to make their life better all the time somehow.
Yeah.
In the tiniest town.
So
with
more
no.
the Laverne and Shirley model than a Girl's model.
I'm going to watch it. The Hub.
Yeah, you are.
Hub.com.
Watch The Hub.
TheHub.com.
Watch TheHub.com.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
So you
watch
need
it,
that watch.
And watch it and tweet at me and tell me what you guys think.
Yeah, for sure.
And if anybody speaks Vietnamese, please tell us what
please tell us
means and whether the
which
internet
of those we should be going right.
Hunter, more importantly, watch
thehub.com.
And the answer's in there.
But just one quick insert. This is Lena Dunham's parents' house.
Oh, see, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. But she's done something,
thanks,
man.
Google.
She's done something.
No, absolutely.
She's a real writer.
Yeah. And it's an important show to have out right now, and what she's doing is important for female comedians.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Dunham. Just, what is that? Is that an Irish name? Dunham.
But if you want to watch people
can
who
I
grew
just,
up
like,
on
go
peanut
that.
Butter and marshmallow fluff, then you should watch
thehub.com. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a class war.
Fuck yeah.
Claire Garrity Mott and Katie O'Brien, Hunter Motz. Thank you, my wonderful engineer, Rena.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Callen. And thank you, Brian Callen.
Yeah. Nah, guys, come on.
You look amazing.
Thanks, guys. That's crazy talk. I'm going to show you what I'm working with after this. I'm wearing a tight silver shirt. It's not gray, guys. Bye-bye. God bless.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.